Hello, folks. How are you? I apologize. And I can't even blame it on the president. You heard his helicopter take off. So I thank you all very, very much for being here. And I particularly thank the cabinet members who are up to their ears in a lot of work. And I'm sorry to keep you waiting. I know you're equally as busy as I am. You know, when the president and I ran for office, we made a basic fundamental commitment. For real. And that was that we want a government to work better, because as long as there is waste and fraud in government, and serious waste and fraud, people lose confidence in the ability of their government to do their job for them, deal with their taxpayers' dollars. And when taxpayers' money is wasted in a fraudulent behavior, it robs the taxpayers not only of their money, but it undercuts the ability to us to serve the people we're elected to serve. And so we decided, and you all decided with us, the reason in part why you chosen for the cabinet spot you're chosen for, that we'd be committed to transparency and accountability and the responsibility we had for husbanding those tax dollars. And we brought that philosophy, the Recovery Act. You're all probably, look, here comes Joe again. How many times we sat around this table and the Recovery Act, but I think, I know you did an incredible job in making sure that the taxpayers' dollars were spent as advertised. When we all sat down, a number of you gave me a lot of ideas early on in the Recovery Act, trying to drag this economy out of the hole. The cliff was about to fall over. And you had some great ideas. Some of your former governors, former military people, business people. And we came up with a new way of doing business, literally. We went and got the toughest inspector general in the entire United States government. We got a guy named Earl Devaney. And we asked Earl to put together a group of 9 other inspectors general. We asked them to go out and survey what was going on in all of your agencies, particularly, by the way, in the FBI, the CIA, the defense agencies. What tools were they using? What new modern tools and devices were available to them in order to detect when things weren't going right? And so we ended up putting together, we had Earl Devaney put together, the Recovery Operations Center. I'd recommend to any of the press here, if you hadn't had a chance to go see that center, it is top line. It is using all the modern technology we have to be able to detect fraud in many cases before it actually happens. And when it occurs, to find folks and actually put them in jail. And the studies of that board and the operations center and our husbanding, your husbanding that money for the American taxpayer, shows that that program, which was predicted to have gigantic amounts of waste and fraud, had less than 0.1% of the money was spent fraudulently. And we've gone after those people. And so this is the kind of accountability we have to, and again, it wasn't my idea. A number of you came to me and said, why don't we institutionalize this kind of accountability government-wide permanently? And so what we're doing today is we're going to talk about a few of the things that are going on in your departments, but how we're beginning, and we have been, institutionalizing the same kind of methods and holding ourselves equally accountable for every taxpayer dollar that's spent. In the area of Medicaid, for example, the Department of Health and Human Services is launching a new program to cut waste in Medicaid. Well, you know, let me give you a couple examples. You know, what happens out there, and we've done this in terms of Medicare, folks are double billing for a lot of things, costing taxpayers tens of millions of dollars. For example, you know, they're authorized, an elderly person is authorized to have a wheelchair. Well, the motorized wheelchair comes along with battery chargers, cushions, wheels, et cetera. That's the package. But guess what's happening? Medicare is being billed first for the wheelchair, and then they get another bill for the wheels, and they get another bill for the battery charger, et cetera. And the battery charger, for example, that's a couple $100. The wheels are $100 a piece. And so this money adds up to a whole lot of money. And so as Kathleen will, the Secretary will talk about this in a minute, they instituted a way to better focus on and account for the money going out for these kinds of things. And as a consequence of that, there was last year we saved $670 million. But here's how we did it. We went to the private enterprise and we said, look, you all folks setting up accounting mechanisms to go out and check where this money went. If you find the fraud, you recover the money, you get a piece of the money. Even after they got paid for getting a piece of the money, it was $760 million back in the Medicare account. Now, we can do the exact same thing with Medicaid, the same thing with Medicaid. And it's estimated that over 5 years, we can save the taxpayer $2.1 billion. Now, that's not just saving the money. It means that we have Medicare and Medicaid for a reason. People need the help. And when somebody essentially steals over $670 million from it, it's not only taxpayers' money is wasted, it's some poor son of a gun who isn't getting the kind of care and help they should get. And so Secretary Sebelius is going to have more to say about this in a moment, in case she has forgotten more about it than I know. But the truth of the matter is we can do better, and we are doing better. And unemployment. Insurance. And you're going to hear from Secretary Solis about this a little bit. You know, you all know because it's the reason why we're all engaged in government. There's a lot of people hurting, man. They're hurting very, very badly. There's people going to bed. They went to bed last night staring at the ceiling, wondering whether or not they're going to have the money to stay in that house a month from now, whether they're going to have to pick up the phone and call their daughter at the state university and say, honey, I'm sorry, you can't go back. I lost my job. Or they've lost their job, and there's no help. There's no unemployment insurance. Well, what's happened is we've done an extensive study, which that Hilda will talk about, and we found out that, well, we already knew, but we've identified more clearly, an awful lot of money being wasted. Jack will speak to this as well. An awful lot of money being wasted, billions of dollars. But one of the things we found out is the states And they're going to talk about this. The states are the ones who actually tell us who's the one that should get the unemployment check. The states are way behind the curve. They're not bad. They're trying their best, but they're way behind the curve. They don't have the technology needed to follow this. They don't. So what's happening? Unemployment checks are going to people in prison. Unemployment checks are going to graveyards. You know, old joke about people, the grave headstones vote? Well, guess what? Headstones are now collecting unemployment insurance some places. And it's a gigantic waste. Or people who are already on unemployment are continuing to get unemployment even after they've gotten a job before they've been paid. So you get a job and your first paycheck doesn't come for 2 weeks or a month. Well, because the states don't have the mechanisms available, they're continuing to pay that unemployment insurance with somebody already started work. Well, that adds up to a lot of money. And so what we're doing here is by coming up with Jack will talk a little about this, but $192 million in grants to the states. And, you know, the press, you'll get all of this. But what we're finding is there's $192 million in awards to states to invest in new technologies, like the ability to compare unemployment claims against death records, prison records, and importantly, hiring records. Now you say, well, why don't we don't? Well, states don't have that technology, a lot of them now. And what we found out, second, we're going to put this online map you're going to see so that everyone can see which states are doing well and which states are not doing well. We want the country to be able to hold us and the states and every government official accountable. And we're identifying six states with very high error rates. And by the way, this is not in contrary to the governors. The governors are asking us for this help. Some of these governors said they need the help, and they're looking for us to help them provide that help because they want to clean this up, too. So, as I said, Secretary Solis is going to give you more about these efforts in a minute or so. And thirdly, I've asked every cabinet agency to undertake a total review of additional savings that can be identified. Because, again, we're all committed to accountability here. It's the same thing we did in the Recovery Act. So this is not what we learned, and I learned it from the cabinet members. What we learned is when you put one person in charge, in your agency. They're accountable. They're accountable for the ideas. They're accountable for the dollars. As my father would say, there's nothing like focusing your attention other than holding you accountable. And so secretary, cabinet secretaries have 1,000 things to do every morning they get up. There should be someone in their operation who have one thing in mind, going and trying to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. Homeland Security, governor, I keep calling Janet governor because she was a great governor. She's also a great sec. By the way, y'all did a great job over this last weekend. I know the incredible amount of work and coordination with your foreign counterparts and your local counterparts you did. You did a great job. But here's the deal. Homeland Security, and Jen has already found a way to save $1 billion. It's pretty straightforward. They sat down like a business would and said, okay, you know that ad on TV about, you know, Charlie's jumping on a plane to go speak with a customer and the accounting guy comes in and says, wait a minute, you can teleconference with that customer. You can save a lot of money and a lot of sweat. Well, what they've done over at DHS is they've cut down on travel, they use teleconferencing, they've cut down on, sounds strange, the subscriptions of magazines and newspapers, doesn't sound like much, but all this stuff really adds up. And they're cutting the unused cell phones that are on a shelf, they're taking them off, decommissioning them, and these and other things like this, they've saved $1 billion. But another way they've saved $1 billion is they go out and they're buying in bulk. Instead of going and buying all this computer programming and one of the people, they're buying it in bulk. Sam's Club does it, you know? I mean, but all kidding aside, this adds up to real dollars. And now the secretary is going to have more to say about this. I give you another example. I can't resist. I'm stealing your thunder here, but this one just makes so much sense. You know, DHS buys almost 20 million gallons of gasoline a year. Now, a lot of that's for their vehicles along the border. At now, roughly $3.60 a gallon. Now, they're now talking about joining with the Department of Defense. If the Department of Defense and DHS decide to negotiate to buy in bulk, which they're doing, they can buy that gasoline at roughly $2.97 a gallon. That's a lot of money. That's a 20% savings. Now you say, well, why did we do that before? Well, we didn't have Janet Napolitano before, you know. All kidding aside, this is a way we can just be more accountable to the taxpayers. And for example, we're also working with these ideas aren't unique to Democrats or this administration or, you know, Senator Coburn. Senator Coburn is an old friend and a staunch critic of me, but we're working with him. Senator Coburn's come up with a number of ideas about how we can eliminate waste and doing everything from eliminating brochures and newsletters and so on and so forth. I'll give you one example. When we were doing the Recovery Act, remember we were doing Lake Ontario, and we were doing some work on that. And I got a call from somebody up in Syracuse who went to law school and said, you know, the Corps is going to spend $110,000 sending out brochures in the area to tell people what they're doing. And I said, whoa, whoa, post it. You know, we got a thing called the Internet. You know, we got a thing, you know, you don't have to spend that money. That would only save 110, but that's a lot of money. Well, doing that system-wide, we can save an awful lot of money. And so this is something, as I said, we did in the Recovery Act. And now the guy has forgotten more about all this than any of us know is Jack Lew. And I know, Jack, you and I are supposed to be somewhere at 11:30. But what I'd like to do is turn it over to Jack, because OMB is the engine behind all of this. And then after Jack, I think the order in which we're going to go is I'm going to turn it to Secretary Sebelius, and then Secretary Solis, and then Secretary Napolitano, and then we're going to ask the press to leave so we can have some real discussion about how each of us can do what we're doing a little bit better. And because the one thing we learned last time, guys, we learned from one another. I mean, the ideas that came out of energy helped commerce helped. And so that's what we want to spend some time doing. We're deadly earnest about making this a government-wide permanent program to account for the taxpayers' dollars. With that, Jack, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President, for that very kind introduction, and thank you for the leadership that you've shown in taking this issue, which is central to whether we can perform at peak efficiency for the American people, and making sure that the whole government focuses on it, the whole administration focuses on it. As I think you and everyone here knows, this is the kind of stuff that OMB thinks about all the time. It's not always that we have a vice president to share in that leadership and burden, and we greatly appreciate it. We've been working hard at OMB for the last 3 years to try and help the Vice President and the President implement this program. And we've made real progress. If you look at contract spending, it's shrunk for the first time in 13 years. We've reduced the amount we spend on contracts. If you look at IT projects, an area where there's been tremendous cost overruns, we've found $3 billion in cost reductions. Working together with everyone in this room, our partners in the agencies. And if you look at improper payments, errors in payments, we've helped agencies to avoid $4 billion in improper payments, and we've tripled our recoveries of improper payments. An important priority that we've set, again, working with the departments, is to dispose of unused federal real estate in a way that will bring back to the American people the value of properties that, frankly, cost us money just to keep them open when we're not using them. And we are committed to working aggressively to achieve the President's goal of at least $3 billion of savings from that. Since the President issued his executive order launching the campaign to cut waste, and since you've taken over the leadership of it, Mr. Vice President, we've been working closely with the chief financial officers across the government, with the deputy secretaries, to make sure that in each department, in addition to the secretaries owning this issue, that there is a structure underneath that's coordinated. This is a very challenging budgetary environment. I don't think I need to tell anyone in this room that we are going to be in a situation where every dollar we spend is going to have to be very carefully scrutinized. It's always important for us to achieve these kinds of savings because that's the right way for us to exercise prudent stewardship over public resources. But in this environment, it will have to do with whether or not we have the resources to perform our core missions. So it takes on an even higher level of urgency. The President has made this a top priority of his. It's a top priority of ours at OMB. And with your leadership, Mr. Vice President, I think we're making real progress in this area. We'll continue to work with the team in this room and all of the people who support you, and we're committed to delivering on the promise of having a government that meets the President's and your standard of operating at peak efficiency. And with that, I am proud to turn it over to Secretary Sebelius.
Well, thank you, Jack, and Mr. Vice President, I do appreciate your leadership and your focus on this because, as you say, the having some accountability, I think, is important, and having a leader like yourself direct us all to pay attention is also incredibly important. I just wanted to tell you about a couple of things. As you mentioned, in the Department of Health and Human Services, we are really focused on critical health programs, not only to save dollars, but to make sure that the one out of every three Americans who relies on Medicare or Medicaid have those resources for health services and not for fraud and waste. We are releasing a final rule for the Medicaid Recovery Audit Contractor Program today, which is modeled after, as you say, the successful Medicare Recovery Audit Contractor Program, which has already started to save money, $670 million in 2011, which is 800% over where we were in 2010. So while those numbers are building, the good news about the Medicaid program is that also it adds to the state coffers. This money is shared both with the federal government and with states. The President clearly directed the Attorney General and me to have an enhanced focus on fraud and abuse, and created a new effort to crack down on Medicare fraud. There are a lot of new tools in the Affordable Care Act, probably one of the strongest anti-fraud bills ever passed in the history of the Medicare program in 45 years. And earlier this month, the Attorney General and I announced our largest single takedown ever, 91 defendants accused of stealing more than $320 from Medicare. That's never happened before, and we have now 7 strike forces on the ground in hot spots around the country, thanks to the tools. We also, for the first time, have a leader in the department who is at CMS, in charge of program integrity, who's building a series of models, including tougher screening procedures for providers before they can start billing. Investigators have new data tools. We have a new systems and are using finally what the private sector has used for years, sort of building models that let us track errant billing procedures and identify them before the money goes out the door. So I can report, Mr. Vice President, that there's never been a worse time to try and steal from Medicare or Medicaid. We're taking these directions very seriously, and we are going to keep working. We are pleased to have 2 leaders on your new Government Accountability and Transparency Board from HHS and have a department-wide Program Integrity Council in place. So we're trying to make sure that the dollars directed to be spent for healthcare services are indeed spent in that fashion and go after folks who would try and defraud that system and steal those precious dollars. So I'm pleased to report that we'll continue to work on these efforts, and I want to turn over to my good friend and partner, Secretary Solis, who's working on behalf of working Americans each and every day. Secretary Solis.
Thank you, Secretary Sebelius, and also congratulations, Vice President Biden, for your ongoing effort to help root out fraud and abuse in the government. I want to take this opportunity to say that we also are very committed at the Department of Labor to provide the best systems in the unemployment insurance case. And we have different tools that we're going to be utilizing. And before you, you have some handouts that you can also take a look at. But I do want to say, I think we also have these charts here. Right. First of all, people need to understand that because of the downturn in the economy, there's been a tremendous strain on our UI system, and I've seen it and heard it from our governors across this country. And due to that restraint, I believe you've seen an increase in improper payments. In fact, it's up to about 11.2% of uninsurance claims that are improper, and that adds up to about $17.5 billion in funding. Needless to say, we know that these numbers are really high, and while people used to use telephones they're using telephones now and going online, you used to have someone that you'd have to go into the local office and actually have someone have FaceTime with you. That has been actually cut out of the system now for many, many years, and as a result, you see a lot of false statements that are being detected now that we're picking up because of technology. So in one way, yes, it can help. On the other hand, this is what has happened. Unfortunately, some of our states haven't been able to provide the necessary support services to make sure that we can go after any improper payments. And part of it is because of the burden system right now, and Vice President Biden, you laid that out very clearly, that our systems are strained at the state level. And in fact, what has happened is many governors are using their resources to help us expedite the processing of getting these UI benefits out in some cases. And what has happened as a result is that you lose integrity in the program because you don't have then other staff to go out and follow up and detect where these abuses are. So 3 things that I think are major for us to point out when what occurs in improper payments. About 30% of these payments go to people who continue to receive claims after they return to work. So that's a big problem. Another 30% are payments to people who fail to register with the state employment service or meet their work requirements. And that's because a lot of people are doing things online. You don't have to necessarily go in, but we do require people to continue to job search, and they're able to call that in. But we need to have more assistance in making sure that there is transparency and accountability. Another 20% of the improper payments is due to inaccurate information about the reasons for separation from the last employer, and that also is a systems problem. We don't have a system set up where businesses can say, well, these are the folks that are indeed on our payroll. So we need to have better connectivity there. So in June, we brought back together task forces to look at some of the 11 high-impact states to develop a comprehensive strategic plan and to share the best practices that we know were working. So we've been working on this for now over almost a year to try to help and provide assistance to the states, because we're finding that a lot of governors really do want to do the right thing, Mr. Vice President, except they lack direction and guidance on behalf of the federal government. So we want to do whatever we can. So in the next few months, our target priorities for those states that are really out of whack, so to speak, are Utah, Georgia, Colorado, New Jersey, and Ohio. And what we intend to do there is to reduce the inaccurate information about how workers became employed. Those are some of the things we'll do. We're also encouraging our state agencies to utilize what we call the National Directory of New Hires to reduce improper claims. Many of our states don't utilize these tools that are available now, so we're going to ask them to step up to the plate. And today I'm excited to roll out our new online effort to bring attention to this problem and the strategies that states can and should utilize to lower their improper rates. So if you were to click on, visitors could go to www.dol. This is the chart that you'd see, and you'd be able to take a look, and all of you have a handout there showing you the most egregious cases by our states here in it's listed here in terms of improper payments. So that'll give you an idea. Anybody, press, constituents, and some of our elected officials should be very interested in looking at this. And it identifies each state's improper payment rate and the total dollar amount lost to these payments over the last 3 years. If you click on and go to the next slide, you'll see where states will give you an idea of what their specific improper payments are. And there's a category, the pie chart, as well as where they stand in terms of their status, if they are helping to meet their our criteria as we monitor them. And obviously what we want to see on the last slide are more green dots. The green dots mean that they're complying. The ones that have checkpoints, they're there, but they're not quite there. So we'll be doing this on a quarterly basis and be able to give, I think, readily available feedback to the different states and to the people that are involved in this. So I think this is a good tool that can be used by everyone, and it falls along the lines of transparency, Mr. Vice President. So I believe that what our goal is to drive down that improper payment percentage down below 10%. So we'll be looking at this in a six-month period, going back and providing technical assistance as best we can and sharing best practices with other states and agencies to make sure that we meet our goals. The last thing I would say is that, Mr. Vice President, we're going to do everything we can to try to work with our partners in those different states that we know want to do the right thing. So with that, I will turn it over to Secretary Napolitano, who will talk about her plans for Homeland Security.
Well, thank you, Secretary Solis, Secretary Sebelius, Mr. Vice President. I'm going to talk about the Department of Homeland Security's efficiency review program that we started shortly after coming into office. And I get to speak, but I brought Amy Schlossman, Marion Roth, and Dan Grant with me, and they've really been the driving forces behind it. So I get to take credit for all the work they've done. And what we did is we Department of Homeland Security, as some of you may know, was created in the wake of 9/11. It's 22 different agencies that were put under one umbrella a few years ago. And as you might imagine, there's all kinds of different personnel practices, acquisition practices, training practices, purchasing practices, and the like. So as part of knitting this department together as one DHS, we began looking at efficiencies that we could achieve while doing that. And so we put together an efficiency review committee. It includes employees from around the department. It's actually called the Office now of Efficiency Review, and it works on not only getting proposals from within the department and looking at other outside business practices, but also deciding which ones are worthy to pursue. We've pursued 36 different ER initiatives. They have, as the Vice President said, saved at least $1 billion already, and that doesn't include $800 million in cost avoidance we identified for FY12 and another $800 million in acquisition reform costs that we've been able to avoid. So you're talking very quickly about major dollars that also increase efficiency and streamline the delivery of government services to the people of our country. Let me give you a few examples just to give some flavor to this. As the Vice President mentioned, we now do annual audits of cell phones and BlackBerries, and when we save $10 million by disconnecting the ones that people don't use. You know, everybody wants the newest thing, you know, the new BlackBerry, whatever, but we're actually looking to see who uses them, and if you don't, you don't keep it. We've saved $15 million by redeploying excess IT equipment, such as servers and computers, instead of buying new equipment. So we move things around to where they can still be used. We've optimized our motor vehicle fleet, and we've begun the transition to hybrid vehicles, leading to almost $40 million in cost avoidances since 2009. And we stop programs that don't work and find lower cost, better alternatives. One of the ways we've done this is, in addition to an Office of Efficiency Review, we created a department-wide acquisition review board. And what they do is make sure that good science and technology standards and requirements and testing procedures are built into the acquisition process. They also work to make sure that our large acquisitions are actually what the people who are the operators need in order to operate. We now bring all the operational components in there. We have stopped several major acquisition programs underway because they weren't working, they weren't going to work, and the decision was you continue to put good money after bad or you simply stop and move to other, maybe off-the-shelf technologies or other things that we can buy and get in the field more quickly. That is the direction we are going. So the Office of Efficiency Review, including employees in the process, and then looking for and having really strict procedures over the large acquisitions that we all do for large departments really makes a difference, Mr. Vice President.
Well, you guys are making a difference. And by the way, we could go down the line from where we could go to education, agriculture, interior. And by the way, that's what we're going to do now when y'all leave. This is going to be, as the President kids me, that I've had a lot more cabinet meetings than he has. That's because he put us all in charge of that Recovery Act, and we probably met, I don't know, 15 times together or more, probably more than that. And we're going to do the same on this. We're just going to do this on a regular basis. So we have something to report to the boss and to the American people. But with that, what I'd like to do is thank the press for being here. I mean that because we want the public to know what we're doing. I appreciate you being here. And over the next day and week and months, we're going to be available for questions on this specific subject and obviously anything else. But what I'd like to do is ask the press to leave now so we can do a little shop talk here and figure out exactly what our next moves are going to be. So thank you all for being here. I truly appreciate it.